Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting from the Big Apple, and my guest, Dr. Henry David Abraham, is also in the New York area as well. We're going to be talking about a topic that affects all of us on one level or another. It's about alcohol and drugs, but it's especially relating to adolescence. We're going to be discussing Dr. Abraham's book, What's a Parent to Do? Straight Talk on Drugs and Alcohol. Dr. Abraham, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
I want my audience to know a little bit about your background because your credentials are quite extensive. You're a graduate of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. You've been the director of substance abuse programs, and you're also a clinical professor of psychiatry at Tufts University School of Medicine, and you're chief of clinical alcohol and drug treatment services at Brown University. Now, you've been involved in working with adolescents for well over 30 years, and I was astonished to find out that you have treated or counseled 90,000-plus patients as well as their families. And in 1985, you shared in the Nobel Peace Prize for your work with Physicians for Social Responsibility and the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. You've received the Iris, Peabody, and Emmy Awards, and you've appeared on all kinds of radio and television programs, and I'm very pleased that you're with me today because this is a subject, well, it has touched my family on so many different levels. I cannot think of one friend that I've known of whose life has not been affected by someone somewhere in their family that has engaged in alcohol or drug abuse. Today, though, to me, it is almost overwhelming the level of narcotic usage. Before I left Seattle to come out here to New York, I was hearing on the news as we were driving in that the amount of heroin addiction in the youths in the Seattle area has escalated. And then there's all of these street drugs that are out there. I want to ask you a personal question, Dr.
Sure.
Abraham. Whatever motivated you to get involved in working primarily with adolescents?
Oh, adolescents. Well, that's an interesting thing. Well, I think that's where the action is. You can work with, certainly I have worked with many addicts and their families who are not adolescents. Adults have these problems more so than adolescents. Because adolescents are just beginning, but I think it's a stitch in time saves nine. That's the whole thinking about it. So you can get kids early, educate them, get them smart, and they can learn how to take care of themselves. They don't fall into the pit, and that's really what it has a lot to do with. Yeah, I guess also the personal issue that you raise. I think I have to full disclosure. My children have been exposed to, any number of drugs and of course, alcohol at tender ages. And we have very close friends of the family who have died, because of, either drugs or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, we have morbidity and mortality, that we've, lived through. And so you want to make a contribution and try to reverse that trend.
You have a statement in your book that I thought was very well put. The science of pharmacology, which studies the effects of drugs on living things, grew out of the science of toxicology, the study of the poisoning of living things, and that ancient Greeks saw only dangers in drugs. Today we are bombarded. I mean bombarded. Radio, television.
Oh, yeah.
Take this drug. Take that drug. Magic pill. Lose 500 pounds in 3 minutes. Take this pill. Take that pill. The other pill. all of this stuff, and the adult population buys into it. In fact, I've known physicians that have had patients that said, I saw this on television. You got to give it to me. Now, when you have the mentality of adults who feel that it's the only way to go, I mean, I think of the Timothy Learys of the world who were happy to fry their brains and extol the virtues of this. I talked to a young person just a month ago that said, oh, I only smoke marijuana. It makes me so much more creative. And I had to bite my tongue because I wasn't in a place to say anything. And I thought,
like,
you're
you
young.
Idiot.
You're young. You're handsome.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Why? Why? Yeah. It doesn't make you more creative. It does. It actually is going to flip you backwards. But I can't tell you how many adults will say this to kids. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Just one won't hurt you.
Yeah, well, you know, part of the problem is that the adult world has lost credibility to teens because of distortion, exaggerated claims, hype at every corner that drugs are the worst thing, drugs are the best thing. There's so much distortion and misinformation out there that kids many times, and particularly because they're adolescents, they want to try things, they want to experiment. So kids say, look, I can't trust what I'm being told. I can only trust what I feel. And so I'll make up my own mind by trying this stuff and seeing how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that mechanism happens a lot. The good news, I have lots of good news today. This is a good,
oh, great.
You gave me on a good news day. The good news is that the vast majority of kids who do that do not end up as street junkies and with AIDS and they don't become crack whores. That does not happen statistically. Of course, it does happen to some kids, and it can be widespread, and of course destroy lives, as we both know. So it's in my current book, which I'm just finishing as we speak, which it's really directed toward kids, and it's ironically it's a very sophisticated argument about for kids, and the argument is, look. There are all kinds of dangerous things. Some things are more dangerous than others. What are the numbers? Do we actually know how dangerous marijuana is? Well, you know, we know some stuff. But the cultural trend is to liberalize marijuana, and there are pluses and minuses in that whole social and policy question. But the child who smokes marijuana occasionally on the weekend with friends is a different consumer than the kid who smokes every day.
Mm-hmm.
The kid who smokes occasionally has, we know, maybe a 7% chance of moving on to hard drugs. A kid who smokes every day has a 50% chance of moving on to hard drugs. So that kid's in trouble. That's a major red flag out there. So it's a matter of trying to be honest with the data. The whole policy issues are, of course, are much bigger, and they cut both ways. We have, we live in a state of prohibition for most drugs, the mind-altering drugs,
mm-hmm.
And so we live in a condition of prohibition with lots of crime, lots of guys who are making lots of money by killing lots of people in Mexico to get stuff into the United States to push into the market. So that's the price we pay to reduce the amount of drugs we have on the street, which, in fact, all that money we pay in the war on drugs does, in fact, reduce access. And if there's a parent out there who wants to know, what can I do? Well, there's many things to do to keep your kids safe. And one way is to reduce access. To have a zero tolerance policy in your own home for marijuana or kids using alcohol, that's a good thing to do. That works. That does help. But there are other and many other ways that parents can reduce the threat to their children through what I call in the book, and I'm sure you read that, heads-up parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And heads-up parenting recognizes that, and the way the book is structured, really, is to help parents not identify what the problem is right now, but to look for signs of future drug use. And it's really cool literature we have. We have a lot of good studies now that show that, for example, a kid who gets good marks in school statistically is safer. Is less likely to be messing up with drugs than a kid who gets bad marks in school. But interestingly, you don't have to be an A student to be safe. A kid who tries hard in school has a safer track record regarding drugs than a kid who doesn't try hard in school.
Now, one of the things that you mention that I found quite fascinating is that there's a genetic patterning, and I know with alcoholism many times there is a patterning of vulnerability, and it's anything that affects the brain. Explain that to us, because there are those people that would say, gee whiz, my dad was an alcoholic, I came from a family of 10 kids, not one of us drinks, but very rarely, so it didn't affect all of us. What was the difference? Well, maybe
I can tell you the answer right away.
Great, what is it?
A good mother.
Yeah, one that threatened she was going to kill him.
Something like that. That's one way to be a good mother. That's right.
Seriously.
You touch a drop, I break your leg.
That's right. She said, you're dead meat. And she wouldn't. I'm serious. That's what she said to them.
No, I know that.
She was strict.
But she also, she was a heads-up mother.
Yes.
She knew. Intuitively, she knew that certainly the sons of alcoholic fathers are at increased genetic risk compared to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've proven this quite nicely in all kinds of animal models and in human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a great take-home lesson for this question. I love the question. Oh, it's the best, Donna. Here's the story. You have a pair of identical twins. Twin number one is alcoholic. The twin two has the same exact genes as twin number one. What's the probability that twin number two will also be alcoholic? The answer? About 50%.
Amazing.
Holy mackerel. It's just 50, it could be 70%, depends on the study. But 50%, that's amazing. Well, what about the other 50%? What determines that? The answer? The environment. Okay, let's look at the environment. What is the number one factor in the environment of those 10 kids that you talked about?
The number one factor in the environment, they step out of line, mom's going to have their liver.
It's the mother.
Yes.
It's the mothering. It's the caring. It's the information that is taught at home. It's the behaviors of the adults that set either a positive or a negative example. What that means is that genes are important, but they're not all important. What is equally as important is what parents do at home, because parents really hold a lot of cards.
Well, they do, but I have known families, good parents, really were concerned with the kids and really were involved with their children, weren't involved in drugs or, alcohol. Maybe they had some social drinking once in a while, and a kid went awry anyway.
Sure.
So it sometimes you have families that's not even in their thinking pattern. It's not in their environment. They don't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
They're not heavy drinkers.
Well, parents don't have all the cards.
They don't have it.
And what happens in time, of course, with each passing day in the life of an adolescent, is that the parents have fewer and fewer cards.
Right.
And so your sense of control, your ability to determine the outcome, really does decrease significantly over time. That's why I think it's really important to educate kids early.
I agree, and I think that if they can be educated to understand whatever they take in to their bodies, food, drink, anything, it affects the brain. And of course, when they're little, they're not going to know that. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of adults that, honest to goodness, think it's cute when they give a child a cigarette to smoke, or they're just, they give them some alcohol early on. You might have somebody in the family say, oh, it's okay for little Johnny to have a beer. It's not going to hurt him. This type of thing. All of this stuff has an influence. And when you look at the subtleties of commercial advertising, it's like, this is macho. This is really cool. Now, you bring out a point that I thought was quite significant. That is, in your book, cigarettes are a very important statistic as far as someone becoming a user.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the chemical?
First of all, I don't really have the definitive answer. I don't know for certain, but we have some ideas that seem to make sense. First of all, nicotine is one of the most highly toxic and addicting drugs that we have. A milligram of nicotine to a naive person taken by injection can be fatal. I mean, you know, it's that kind of, I hope I got the dose right there. But a tiny, tiny amount. And there's a whole milligram in each cigarette. But of course it gets burned up and you're taking in much less. But, it's highly addicting. Secondly, it's available. It goes back to the access principle here. It's available. In fact, the cigarette companies used to hook kids by insisting that the retailers place them at child height, close to the door, so kids could steal the cigarettes and then get dependent on them. That was a marketing policy that was brought out in congressional.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the big tobacco has done actually horrible, horrible things. And if we think, if we just tote up the bodies at the end of the year, and on one side we have cigarettes, and on the other side we have every drug and alcohol known to man. There are 10 times more deaths from smoking easily than from heroin and cocaine and from marijuana and the other stuff. Availability has a lot to do with it. You know, we make it pretty hard to get heroin and cocaine. We don't make it hard to get cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, and that is something, oh my goodness, I think one of the saddest things is when you see an adult who has got lung cancer and they're still puffing away like a smokestack.
Yeah.
And emphysema.
Yeah.
And this, it is just unbelievable. I've known more than one person who has had family members that were still puffing away, and there they were lugging an oxygen tank around, and eventually they suffocated to death. So that alone is a visual to make anybody sort of get shivers up and down their spine, but it's a tremendous addiction.
You know, it's so addicting, you can turn that visual off. You don't read the letters you don't read the Surgeon General's warning on the pack of cigarettes. You need that drug because there are benefits from nicotine. It takes away anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It sharpens your focus. It calms you down. It sounds like a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's doing terrible things to your body while it's doing that. And it goes back to the whole question of how many drugs do we really need in our body at any given time? There's a great quote, from the book from Oliver Wendell Holmes, who said, if all of the pharmacopoeia fell into the ocean, it would be all the better for mankind and all the worse for the fish.
That's what we're doing to the fish anyway, and we're doing it to ourselves.
That's right. Well, that's true. We're doing it to both the fish and ourselves.
And ourselves right now. The biology of addiction, mm-hmm. you say once it starts, it's very, very difficult to reverse it, which we've just talked about nicotine, but we're also going to talk about the drugs and the alcohol. Now, you have a quote here in 2004 that the National Institute of Drug Abuse, the United States spent $133 billion, that's a big B, in that year to pay for the medical complications of addiction. That number is hard to even wrap your mind around.
I know, it's amazing. They didn't pay the money themselves. They did a study which figured out the cost of addictions each year to the United States, to all of us. You wish the NIA and the NIDA was paying for that. No, Donna, you're paying for that.
That's right. Taxpayers are paying for it.
Exactly. So there's a tremendous, and you're paying for it on multiple levels. You know, you have a child who drinks and drives and gets into an accident. He's not going to die more often than not. But I guarantee you, the insurance company is going to have a thing to say about the size of the premium, and you're paying for that.
Yes, we are.
You know, so the cost comes in multiple levels, and of course, the saddest cost is the long-term human cost to individuals and their families over the years of you know.
Oh yes, it just sometimes it just destroys whole families. You talk about some programs that are successful and others that aren't. Now, we've had, I don't know how many government programs that fall on their face, and one was DARE, D-A-R-E, that was the Drug Abuse Resistance Education, and that was a total flop.
Yeah, I'm not sure DARE was a total flop. You're tough, Donna, but it certainly did not prove out. And I think the problem is that, you know, the DARE model was to have a friendly police officer come in and tell horror stories to, you know, fourth graders or fifth graders,
mm-hmm.
and to see if that would somehow make a difference. And I think the answer is, over time, it did not make a difference. There was no difference between those kids exposed to DARE and those kids who were not exposed to DARE. And so we learned maybe the scare 'em approach isn't such a good idea. And in fact, that's really, I believe deeply that kids should really know the truth about these things and not be subjected to horror stories or if you drink, this is what will happen to you. Well, if you drink, you're going to get drunk. That's what's going to happen to you. And if you're lucky, you won't get in an accident. But the horror stories are really, I think, a disservice because kids turn them off. You know, they sort of get off on the Halloween issues, images of, bleeding arms hanging out of smashed car windows. But that doesn't really significantly make an impact. On the other hand, there are thoughtful people in this field. The one that comes to mind is the work of Gerald Botvin in New York. And Dr. Botvin has put together a program that has been tested for many years called Life Skills Training in the schools. And he
mm-hmm.
takes a bunch of sixth graders and he gives them the training for an extended period of time. Then he goes back in high school to see how they're doing compared to kids who didn't get the training. And the kids who were educated properly do better. They have less cigarette smoking and less, use of alcohol. They're more with it. So we can teach our kids, but we have to teach them honestly and consistently over time.
You know, it brings to mind when I worked for a police department many years ago, there was an officer that was having trouble with his adolescent son. And so he had a fellow officer that took the son and said, okay, this kid, we know what he is. He's a male. His hormones are raging. He's wanting to be independent, but he's never really seen real life. He had never really been in the world. He had been raised in a family that was caring. He had a good education. He had all of these things, but he was as green as anybody could be. So the fellow officer took this man's son, because he got into trouble for something. He said, okay. He took him to the drunk tank in downtown L.A., which is unbelievable. And he said, okay, now this is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to do.
This should be a reality show called
That is your reality show, but this was a real reality show. He said, this is what you're going to be in. Now, you are going to clean up after these people. You are going to be in this environment with them. And he said, you're going to sit in a cell. You're going to know what it's like because this is the real world. This kid saw, he was under this officer's supervision for a week, and with full permission of the father, This kid was absolutely blown away. He had never seen what you call the dark side of life.
Mm.
He had never seen what it was like to see somebody in the DTs. He was right there in the real world, and it just blew him away.
I don't know how he turned out, but Donna, there's one heck of a college essay.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is something, it turned that kid around.
Mm-hmm.
But the father said, I can't do it, I'm his dad.
Yeah, it's hard.
So he turned
problem,
it over.
Of course.
Yeah. And so that was...
You can't do it all. You need a...
Mm-hmm.
I like to say that it takes a community to cure a drunk.
Yes.
And it really takes a community to make a healthy adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't do it in your living room. And
that's right. You can't intellectualize.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think in many ways... Because of television, because of various things that are showing, you say, oh, well, this is a fiction story. When you watch L.A. Cops or whatever you're going to watch,
sure.
You see this and you go, yeah, and it doesn't seem to be real. But when you are actually living it, when you're around it, when you're seeing this environment, when you look at what's going on, then that can really be a wake-up call for many. But the truth is we have so many young people today that are involved in this, and your book, What's a Parent to Do, I think is just absolutely wonderful because you give some tools to parents. You have some wonderful references in here. You talk about various things that parents can pay attention to.
And, the nice thing about it is every one of those variables has been proven to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I talk about sports. So if your kid says, I'm thinking about going out for hockey, now you may not like hockey, but if you'd like your kid being sober, give your kid a chance to go out for a sport and support that.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way, religious education has been shown to be effective because all the great religions teach moderation in things.
Mm-hmm.
And a kid who is more involved in his temple or church is much more likely to grow up with a good set of values compared to the kid who doesn't have that benefit in his life.
And I think holding them accountable too is very important. You and the adults, though, again, we adults have to take a responsibility to a degree. And if you're a heavy smoker as an adult, what example are you giving to your kids? Again, there are these things when kids see certain things in the family that may just make it so that they never ever consider it themselves when they see the damage. On the other hand, I've known people that have had a predisposition towards it. They followed it almost identically, the patternings of one parent in particular. It's like the parent had a clone.
Yeah.
And all of their bad habits.
It is a clone. I mean, it's
oh
a clone.
Oh my goodness! It's
you
just
know?
Amazing.
It's got the wrong genes.
Yeah, and you go, what happened to that kid? They're identical to this person in the family: their grandfather, their mother, their father. Go, what happened here? Well, it's one of those patterns that sometimes can go along. The truth is, we don't have to get stuck.
The first step that a parent has to do, I think, is to do a personal inventory. What am I doing as a parent in terms of the consumption of drugs or alcohol that is creating some kind of pattern for my children to follow? And
mm-hmm.
is that a healthy act? And if not, shouldn't I change it? That personal evaluation can be really effective. I don't know a study off the top of my head, but I bet if we did a study of parents who quit smoking while they had small children in the house compared to parents who didn't, that the kids in the second group would be more likely to be smokers. And it's the old principle: don't do what I say, do what I want you to do,
mm-hmm.
or don't do what I do what I say. That's
right.
And that's the problem, of course.
Now, Dr. Abraham, I know that we're just about out of time. Your book, another point that I want to bring out, is for those of you who are listening to this show, if you don't know about PCP, if you don't know about the drug factories that are churning out these things. And I have to admit, this isn't in my world. I choose not to have it in my world. But this book is so loaded with good information that you could sit down with your family and you could read this book out loud and discuss it. And it's important because it's important to pass along to anyone, adult, kid, to become educated about why drugs, alcohol are dangerous, what it is that creates a toxicity to the body, and why. It's a fascinating book. It is an educational book. And if you're a parent, if you're expecting a child in your family and you go, oh my goodness, what can I do? Dr. Abraham's book, What's a Parent to Do? Straight Talk on Drugs and Alcohol, is a must read. It is something that I think is just so well said, and from a man himself who has been dealing with this for over 30 years. Dr. Abraham, do you have a website that kids can, parents
I
can go
do,
to?
I do, and there's a lot of good stuff on that site now that you, my son put it together, and he says it's a good site. No, it is a good site. It has a lot of good information. My son squeezed out of me. It's called drabraham.com, and it's drabraham, A-B-R-A-H-A-M.com. And yeah, you can see a lot of stuff there.
Well, that's wonderful. Dr. Abraham, thank you so much for being my guest today. His website, drabraham.com, What's a Parent to Do? Straight Talk on Drugs and Alcohol. So be sure you check his site out. This is something you may want to share with a friend and maybe with teachers at a school. It's well worth having in the library. Become educated and share it with others. This is Donna Siebel in the Big Apple. We'll be talking with you in just a little bit. We're going to take a break and then we'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, and I'm here in the Big Apple. On Monday, I'll be back in the home office. Now, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the telephone number to call in to, toll-free worldwide, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share with you some facts and information regarding drugs and alcohol. To me, this is so significant, and I will tell you why. When you have drugs and alcohol affect people that you love, and you realize and you know for a fact that once it hits the brain, it creates a chemistry that can be so very, very destructive. And I learned many, many years ago, and I've never indulged in drugs. That's just not something that I have found that I even wanted to explore, because I knew I had seen some things about drugs, and I just said, if I have anything that affects my mind, I don't want to be involved. And that was long before I got into the area of psychic work. And then when I started developing my own intuitive capacities, it became even more important to take care of the body so that the brain, your body, is not affected in a negative way. But I wanted to share these facts with you because they are important. And it's important for you as an adult. And if you have young people in your family, you need to know these things, because these statistics really are significant. It's a fact that people who start drinking at an early age, for example, at 14 or younger, I've interviewed people that started drinking at the age of 10. This just blew me away. 10 years old. Mom and dad had a lot of social drinking. They started it. The average is about 14, but they have started younger. When they start drinking young, generally increases the chance that they'll develop alcohol problems at some point in their lives. Now, if you want to know about these statistics, there's a website, health.org. Health.org. Another fact, 83% of all students who said they had gotten drunk at least once said they were still getting drunk in the 12th grade. I'm going to repeat that. 83% of all students who said they have gotten drunk at least once said they're still getting drunk in the 12th grade. 86% of youngsters who said they tried smoking at least once continue to smoke in the 12th grade. Now, where can you find these facts? Check out CNN.com. That's right, CNN.com. Even a one-time user of stimulant drugs risks death due to heart attack, respiratory failure, stroke, coma, or seizures. A one-time user stimulant drug. More hospitalization per year result from crack and cocaine use than from any other illicit substance. Check the American Medical Association for that information. Today, and if I were a parent in today's world, I would just be absolutely anxious about this. Drugs and alcohol have infested schools so significantly that they threaten that our kids and their ability to learn and develop their talents is going down. That's on CNN.com, on their website. Also on CNN, each year, 13.2 million students. Now wrap your mind around that number. 13.2 million students between the ages of 12 and 17 become new users of tobacco, alcohol, and illegal drugs. Why? The kids have the money to spend. Do you know that during the Second World War, drug use in the United States was almost non-existent? Do you know why? There was no money. There was no money to pay for drugs. I have been in major cities and environs talking with different people, and they say young people today have so much income to spend. Now, I know there's a lot of young people that don't have it, but they get it from somewhere. They have money to spend. If they don't, they get into thievery. They get into a world, a dark world, where adults manipulate them so that they can get the drugs. It's a form of slavery, if you will. Once you get hooked, that's what happens. Nearly 3,000 American children and adolescents under the age of 18 become regular smokers each day. 3,000 kids each day becoming smokers. Of these, one-third will die from tobacco-related diseases. This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association. And some of the problems linked to alcohol abuse include not being able to meet work, school, or family responsibilities, drunk driving, arrests and car crashes, and drinking-related medical conditions. And you can go to health.org. Now, this information you can check out. If you are a parent You need to understand that this is significant. This is not a joke. And Dr. Abraham, in his book, What's a Parent to Do, reveals so much information. We need to be aware of this because as adults, we need to be responsible in our own behavior so that we can be an example to those that are around us. Any one of us can make mistakes, but how can a young person respect anything if they don't have a good example? So that is very important. Accountability, both for youth, is very important. And that is a challenge that we have in today's world. If you'd like to call and chat with me today, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then I'll tell you what I perceive. And, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. Next week, we've got a great lineup of guests. We're going to be talking about Mars cavers, stars when the sun shines, memoirs of traveling in Japan, dealing with various cultures, all kinds of unique experience this man had. We're going to be discussing that. And Mary Beth Adams on Tuesday will be talking about four ingredient vegan. Now, you don't have to be a vegan to enjoy this. If you like vegetables and would like to find flavorful ways, delicious ways to fix them, this show you'll enjoy. I love cooking, and I don't have the chance to do it as often as I would like, but this is wonderful, wonderful food, and it gives you opportunity to try different things. Tommy Spaulding is going to be my guest on Wednesday, not just who you know. This is vitally important because it's about who you are, what you do, how you do it. It's not just who you know. So Tommy's going to be sharing some very good points of information. And then Margaret Hawkins is a woman who has put together a personal story about her family. It's titled, How We Got Barb Back. Barbara is her sister, and she is a schizophrenic. She was diagnosed with this mental disorder so many years ago when they didn't have 50% of the knowledge that we have today. But by golly, it will touch your heart and your mind. It'll also educate you regarding this mental illness. And then next Friday, we're going to have an open mic day. That's right. We're going to have an open mic day, and you'll have a chance to chat. And, of course, Halloween is going to be coming up. Ah, yes, that wonderful, wonderful holiday. And I've got some tips for you, so we'll be sharing some of that. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. This is Donna Sebo in the Big Apple. We'll be coming back right after this message, and I'll have some good things to share with you. So don't go away and give me a buzz at 888-815-9756 if you'd like to chat. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Well, I'll be back at home in the Pacific Northwest here in the Big Apple. All of a sudden, the temperatures are dropping. Really was a brisk, cold, windy day here. And I'll tell you what, New York City, you have to have on your walking shoes. Trust me, it can take you quite a long time to walk a very short distance, especially when you have all of the people in New York that you've got that are out on the street walking at the same time, plus the tourists. It's unbelievable. This is a city where you can find anything and everything, whether it's food, clothing, you name it. It is here. And if you love to shop till you can drop, by golly, just know all you need is a good pair of walking shoes, dress accordingly, and be ready to do that rock and roll with the shopping, because it is more fun than you could ever imagine. And I watch the people around here, and you know, I don't see many fat people in New York City. I really don't. And the reason you don't see fat people in New York City, do you know the average New Yorker walks a minimum of 5 miles a day? That's right. A lot of New Yorkers don't even have cars. They walk, they take the subway, or they take a bus because things are so tightly organized and together. And man, do they walk. You don't see them just, you can always tell the tourists and you can tell the New Yorkers because the New Yorkers are hustling. Man, they're out there, they're just moving. So that's the way I walk, and it really is fun. But it is just a blast. If ever you have a chance to come to the Big Apple, I recommend you do it. Just remember, have a good pair of walking shoes because you want to alternate them. Have one pair one day and another pair another day, and that way your feet will stay happy. Hey, Halloween's coming up. And there are so many fun things that you can do. I just absolutely, of course, I think people are in costume in New York all the time. You never know. There could be someone coming out from a play. It's always entertaining here, but they really love the holiday here in New York, and costumes are really, really big. So if you want, then you can just get some great ideas from everywhere, and I love people's imaginations, especially with makeup and all kinds of things that they come up with. Well, you'll have to be really imaginative, but one thing that can be absolutely fun to design, and I have seen some of the wackiest things for pets. Yes, people will dress up their pets, and you can really see a lot on YouTube, apparently, and you're just going to have to check it out. They've got a musical montage of dogs dressed as lions, superheroes, spiders. I've got a picture in front of me with a dog. He looks like a golden lab, and he's holding a Halloween bucket of pumpkin, and he's in a ghost costume. He is absolutely amazing. And then also, they've got cats on YouTube dressed as, you know, all kinds of characters. There's just amazing things that people do with animals, and it makes you wonder how they even stand. I got some information from something on YouTube about people that paint cats. Can you believe that? I'm telling you, the artistry was amazing, and I've never known a cat to sit still for much of anything except when it's being petted and it's on its own terms of sitting there in your lap. But they do, and the artistry is just incredible. But one of the things that is absolutely wonderful, if you really want to get into the spooky mood, is finding spooky stories to tell and setting up your own theater of type in your own home. Or if you're going to be doing something with friends, setting it up. And it can just be a blast. I can remember when I was a kid, we'd usually scare ourselves to death. And we'd start out with a story, and we would have a beginning, and then everybody would take a turn at embellishing the tales. By the time we got started, usually it was done outside, as I was living in California, so it was warmer there. But we would be someplace, and then we'd have our flashlights, and we would do all kinds of stuff. And it was just spooky, spooky, spooky. And of course, we made sure that we would have something to help boost us after scaring ourselves to death with something special, like some special desserts or whatever have you. It's just really a lot of fun. I love it. I love to see the imagination, the creativity of people. So I just know you can have a great time. And do you know what they found? The color orange that is associated with Halloween is such an upbeat color. Have you noticed that the orange is like a golden orange that's typically utilized? And when you have this color around you, it really is invigorating. It is an energy color, and it absolutely brightens up a person's attitude. You don't see many people wearing it, though. You don't see a lot of people wearing the color of orange as part of their wardrobe, because it is such a high energy color, and it's not really compatible with a lot of people. I love the study of color. If ever you want to learn about people, who they are, what they represent, find out what their favorite colors are. It really can tell you a lot. And it's fun to people watch. It is fun to say, why is it that there is such an attraction for the color black? And I know it's a popular color for Halloween because of the witches and the black cats and all that kind of symbology. But black is truly no color. Just like white is there, but it is all colors. Black and white contain all colors of the spectrum. That's right, they really do. The white, though, reflects the black. The black absorbs. Fascinating stuff. So if you can, sometime just do some homework on it, and you'll have a good time with it. I was speaking of pets and costumes. When we have holidays, it's very important that we keep our animals safe. And in my neighborhood at home, I was saddened to see signs being posted all around the neighborhood. There was one cat that disappeared, and there were two dogs. All of these were small animals. Now, whenever you're living out in a natural environment where there are hawks or eagles, which we happen to have in our environment, but not an abundance of them, sometimes a small pet can be picked up. But more often than not, animals get out of their yard. We've seen animals walking around, and so many times people do not put collars on their animals, or they don't microchip them. I know of one lady, she had had her dog for like 10 years. All of a sudden, one day, somebody left a door open. Her dog got out. She's never seen her. It's broken her heart. This was like her best friend. She had never had a collar on that dog, and she had never microchipped the dog. And she was in an area near a forest, and the animal could have been picked up by someone, small, no identification, probably was not turned into a shelter. Someone took the dog in, or the dog could have died just from exposure. So remember this. When you have an animal, it takes only a few minutes to have a completely painless injection of an identifying microchip. It's sort of like a pet GPS system. And do you know it has helped to recover 97% of lost pets? So you need to talk to your vet about this. This is very important. I know what it was like when I lost my baby. And also, make sure that you keep your pet's safety in mind, especially around Halloween, people coming to the door. Put them away. Put them someplace where they're not going to be likely to run out the door. This is Donna Siebel. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have an absolutely awesome weekend. I'll be back in my home turf on Monday. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.